Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. There's a new clinical study from a Polytechnic Institute in France, in Lausanne, that talks about pomegranate being good for anti-aging. That's good news. And this was published in Nature Metabolism, major peer-reviewed journal. A lot more coming on Health and Healing Day. I've selected a lot of insights into how we can actually slow down and reverse the aging process. Also today, we're going to listen to a Dr. Mumbai, M-U-M-B-I, from Africa, from Kenya. She would be like the Ralph Nader of Africa. And she's talking about how major pharmaceutical corporations, with malice aforethought, put sterilizing agents into vaccines, the human papillomavirus vaccine, and it's sterilizing people, young women in Kenya. Now, that's an ethical question and a health question. What gives the right to certain individuals, powerful, wealthy, billionaires, to decide we have too many people in the world, and then say these are the people that shouldn't breed anymore? That is reprehensible. And once that you hear this segment, please feel free to call in and share your points of view, whatever they may be. Our talkback number is 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. Today I also play my Dinner with Andre, almost a cult-like film where two people are just, the whole film is about them having dinner and the conversations they have. And each part of the conversation is like 3 or 4 minutes, and they cover a lot of topics. I'm just covering one today, and that's their idea of conspiracies at that time. We're talking about something nearly 40 years old. Then why we're heading for a climate catastrophe from the BBC Newsnight segment. And then honest government. Today we're going to look about internet censorship. So, and you can watch any of these segments, and a lot of people have. So write this down, please. Go to youtube.com/PRNFM. Again, youtube.com/PRNFM. So you won't just be able to hear it, you'll be able to watch it. And it's more interesting that way. For those of you who don't have access to the internet, and many don't, especially some older people in the audience, then you can always pick up any telephone, cell phone, regular phone, and even on your computer. Here's the number you can dial to listen to this program live, Monday to Friday, 774-337-6068, 774-337-6068. But it turns out that about 98% of the people listening each day listen at home in the evening. In fact, the last metrics I saw was that the person listening to this program is a 37-year-old college-educated woman listening from home in the evening. And then the demographics change when it's which part of the program do people like most and how long do they listen. And that's why we do health and nutrition. That's our number one topic. For younger people, happens to be social issues that we address. And most people enjoy the original commentaries, which I try to write 2 to 3 a week, and then the original investigative reports. And by the way, the Wikipedia ones, every single one is different. No two are alike. Now, yes, Wikipedia is the one we're challenging, and as you will see now, next, we're challenging Google. And that starts, I believe, next week. And then Facebook, because these are the people who have absolute control over what we're informed about or misinformed. So read the articles, pass them on, share them with everyone. And that's important. Last week, Deepak Chopra wrote me and said, really appreciate the level of scholarship and integrity and honesty in your articles that you and Richard Gow are writing. Hence, I'm sending them out to my 3.2 million Twitter accounts, and suddenly we saw this huge spike on Thursday in people listening and downloading these articles. Also, on Monday, I'm going to ask Glenn, our IT person in the office, to make it easier for everyone who wants to get on my Facebook to get on. We're packed. But 6 years ago, there were almost every day I'd look and be like 7.3 million, 7.8 million, and then it disappeared. Clearly, that was not by accident, because evidently someone didn't want me to know how many people were, you know, coming on every day. So a lot of people, we have thousands waiting to get on, but we've reached a limit. So there's another way of doing it. He told me that you can do it without having a limit. So it'll be on Monday. We'll fix that. We're almost done with the newest documentary, 7.5 years. We're 2 weeks away, I was told just a moment ago, from our editor. She's phenomenal, by the way. She's worked on documentaries. She must have worked on the last 40 documentaries over the last 35 years. Valerie Van Cleve in our studio in New York. Almost done. And then I get back to finishing the one, Brother, Can You Spare a Dime? That was the follow-up to Poverty, Inc. Half of it was filmed, then we had to stop. But we'll continue with that. And the good news is I have over 70, I repeat, 70 lectures that I have done, completed, including 5 where I'm at now, last week. All of them were filmed, and now we're going, after the first year, we're going to make all those self-empowerment documentaries and stream them over the internet. So a whole lot's going on. We go to the latest in health and healing. Now, I'm a big believer in pomegranate because the peer-reviewed literature shows all the good things it does. But we believe that it also helped the aging process. Now there's a study published in the peer-reviewed journal Nature Metabolism to prove that. An anti-aging compound named urolithin, that's U-R-O-L-I-T-H-I-N-A, or abbreviated, it's just U-A. It's derived from pomegranates, and it's been proven in a clinical trial to improve mitochondrial and cellular health. So that's a big deal. And it can slow down certain aging process by improving the functioning of your little energy factories, the mitochondria. These are also called cells powerhouses. The study also showed ingesting urolithin A poses no risk to human health, and it's the only known compound that reestablished the ability of cells to recycle defective mitochondria. Now, there are other nutrients that will lay down new mitochondria. PQQ is one, and NAD is another, or NADH. But this one actually can clean up all the defective mitochondria and get them out of the body, which is important. So all this comes from the molecules found in pomegranate. So one more reason, pomegranate, which we already know has what are called ellagitannins, E-L-L-A-G-I-T-A-N-N-I-N-S, that's a tannin, and those molecules are extremely beneficial because they're converted into a compound called, you guessed it, urolithin A in human gut. One more reason, when we keep saying keep your gut healthy, no sugars, no meat, no wheat, no alcohol, healthy foods, clean foods. I keep saying the health of the gut is the health of the whole body. And the average person has very toxic guts. So when you are slowing down the mitochondria from being destroyed, you're slowing down the aging process. So that's good. That's something very important, and it's been promoted nowhere in the United States. From McMaster's University, they found that a high-intensity exercise improves memory in seniors. And this was published in the peer-reviewed journal of Applied Physiology, Nutrition, and Metabolism. And most people who are older have little to no exercise. And they should be doing exercise, even if you have to help them and walk with them. Because otherwise, anyone who has had to deal with dementia, an advanced dementia or Alzheimer's, knows that it's a catastrophic disease. And it affects millions of Americans and people living in Canada. And so they found that by exercising for short bursts, you can improve by 30% memory performance. And while people worked out less, moderately, too slow, no improvement. So once again, we find that those bursts of energy when you're working out make a difference. This was a 12-week study that they measured people in there and found that it worked. So remember, the takeaway message here is, the older you are, the more exercise you require. When you're taking in the fresh, hopefully organic fruits and vegetables, that's the best. I highly recommend that. And a study from Ohio State University asked a basic question. What do these fruits and vegetables contain? Well, they contain polyphenols. Poly, P-O-L-Y, phenols, P-H-E-N-O-L-S. And again, I spell things because a lot of people may not understand a term. We have new listeners every day and from all over the world. We're worldwide. And so I want to make sure that they can write it down and then look it up and see its significance in the peer-reviewed literature. So when you really have four choices. One is to try to get locally grown organic produce wherever possible, like locally grown mushrooms and sprouts. And by the way, everyone here at this anti-aging clinical study is learning how to grow sprouts. I just came from the gym and we had about 100, I'm guessing around more or less 100 trays, big trays of sprouts. Now, when they go home, or you at now listening right now at your home, you could put three or four trays on your counter. In fact, you could get a baker's rack. That's one of those tall racks, generally around 6 to 7 feet high. And that's where you put different items as you're cooking them. If you have a restaurant, every restaurant has a baker's rack. But you could put sprouts on that rack and therefore grow them perfectly. And you could even, I'm going to show you how not to use soil on an upcoming program. I don't have time today, but I'll show you how to use coconut fibers. So there's literally no problem with the bacteria because you have to wash sprouts very thoroughly and then spin them down, then put them in a bag. And there's a special plastic bag you can get. It's like a green bag. And when you put anything at all, you put into a plastic bag and you start to zip it closed, zip it until there's like a quarter inch left. Then press with your hand down so all the air goes out, so it's flat. It'll last twice as long. It's the oxygen in there that speeds up oxidation. In any case, that's the first way. That would be my five-star recommendation as far as how to eat your produce. Secondly, juice it. Do as much juicing as you can, especially of vegetables. And if you're going to juice fruits, it would be grapefruit and green apple with lemon. That would be the superstar of cleansing, detoxification, and alkalization, which turns off a lot of pain in the body and helps you with gout, flush out those crystals. Third would be concentrate. That's where once they've done the juicing, they wick off and dehydrate about one-third or even more of the water. So instead of getting a free-flowing juice, you get a kind of a thick, syrupy concentrate, but that has 2, 3, 4 times more nutrients in it. So that's terrific, too. And then finally, the one that has the highest amount of all nutrients in enormous concentrations are the powders, especially powders that are juiced and dried without high heat, so they're still living and raw. And ideally, you have all that. You can put some concentrate into your smoothie and powders in your smoothie. You have throw in some fresh fruits. You get whole nut butters, some plant-based protein. When you sit down to a meal, then, and we're overeating. We really only need, I only eat one meal a day. I have a smoothie for breakfast, one meal in the evening and in the afternoon, a little bit of grazing, and good to go. We're just, you think with all the information we have, people would be better educated, but we're not teaching real living foods nutrition in schools, and we should. That should be mandatory class. Also, I think, this is just my own personal opinion, I'd like to know what you think, I believe that we should have in every class from first grade right up to college a class, not every day, but at least once a week, dealing with hygiene, personal hygiene, preventative measures, chores, and the reason we should do chores and actually be happy about it instead of angry about it or resentful. Because the person who is doing chores, consciously doing chores, as the younger person, they're far more organized and responsible as an adult. And we have a whole generation that you mentioned chore and they have to look it up on Google that they don't know what it means. Cleaning your room, that they block completely. I think that's not allowed on any computer of any millennial or teenager today. So this would help us. Anyhow, this Ohio State University study found that polyphenols help you with inflammation. They turn off inflammation all over the body. Now, mind you, your blood is circulating through your body very quickly. When it's circulating, it's carrying the nutrients. Now, about 10% of the blood is in your arteries. About 12% is in your veins. But that means that about 80% of your blood is in your capillaries and capilloids, the tiny little veins that feed all the cells of the body. And so you've got to get nutrients in there, get oxygen in, and take the waste and debris out. And that's where your polyphenols really achieve a great deal. By the way, that's the polyphenols what give green tea its anti-obesity and anti-inflammatory properties also. So you want to turn off the heat in the body as far as its inflammatory response, especially for diabetics and people with metabolic conditions, high blood pressure, heart disease, then you want the polyphenols. All right? And especially with green tea, the polyphenols consist principally of what is called EPA, E-P-I, gallo, G-A-L-L-O, catechin, C-A-T-E-C-H-I-N, epigallocatechin, or E-G-C-G, to make it short and easy. Now, always take vitamin E with green tea. Why? Because the bioactive compounds that fight free radicals and act as anti-diabetic agents do better with that. And if you really want to supercharge it, put in some coconut oil as well. And vitamin C and vitamin E mitigate the risk of pancreatic ductal adenocarcinoma from meat-derived mutagen exposure, according to University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center. So every time you're eating meat, you're eating something that caused cancer. And the financial support of this was the National Cancer Institute. So vitamin C and vitamin E, they modulate the association between meat-derived mutagen exposure and the risk of pancreatic cancer. How about that? So just get off the meat, get on a healthy plant-based diet. Oh, and if you want to help yourself with your liver, protecting your liver, green cardamom. Cardamom, C-A-R-D-A-M-O-N. All right, and this is from Turin University Medical Sciences, published in the BMC, Complementary and Alternative Medical Journal. And a lot of people have non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. It's a common form of liver disease that is not caused by alcohol consumption. So this green cardamom helps that. And by the way, any of you who have fungus? Well, one of the most powerful antifungal compounds you can take, coconut oil. That's right. You can apply it topically if you have it on your feet and take it internally. This is according to Tufts University. It's a very medicinal food, and it is a medicinal food. It helps boost heart health, reduces stress, prevents brain diseases like Alzheimer's, and now it has strong antifungal properties. And this was published in the peer-reviewed journal of the American Society of Microbiology's journal M-Sphere. It found the coconut oil can control the overgrowth of Candida albicans, and we know that that's a type of pathogenic yeast that we don't want. So just one more good thing we can do. And for all of you pregnant women, a snack of nuts, we're not talking about roasted and salted, we're talking about raw nuts, can help improve brain development in children. This is from the Barcelona Institute for Global Health, published in the European Journal of Epidemiology. So we try to bring you everything that matters, and these things we share every day. We take our time, we review all the world literature, and find you the best to stay healthy. I remember once, back in 1977, a person was visiting me over at WBI Studios and said, "Gary, you're going to run out of stuff to talk about in another month or two." You think he was wrong? You bet. There's never enough time to share everything there is to know. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to go right to Honest Government about telling the truth in their own unique way. A group of Australians do this, and this is about internet censorship. And we've edited, since we didn't think, evidently, Jesse didn't think, well, if this is, you know, Honest Government, it must be a serious taken. We got one out in the air that kind of had an awful lot of vulgarity in. So for the sensibility of our audience, those have hopefully all been edited. Back in a moment.
Internet?
Isn't it a totes a maze?
No, look at that doggo.
And the kids learning on Wikipedia.
What about sharing the memes?
You like that, hey?
Well, you then.
Because we're about to replace the internet with a brand new experience. The Filternet. To bring you the Filternet, we've introduced Article 13 into the copyright reform legislation about to be voted on in the European Parliament. If passed, we will install a filter to scan all content for possible copyright violations before you can upload it online. Experts warn this could bring down the whole internet as we know it. But hey, if it makes our friends richer, we think that's a fair price to pay.
Filternet.
Meet our friendly new AI filter, or Phil for short. Phil is a dumb mother who cannot distinguish actual copyright infringements from legitimate content such as commentary, criticism, or parody. Which means if you're a YouTuber trying to commentate the news, or parody a song, or a star trying to keep the internet weird, Phil will be like,
"Computer says no."
This shit will be particularly annoying for anyone working on collaborative projects like Wikipedia and GitLab, which Phil will go full Infinity War on. Oh, and Phil is very expensive, so startups will find it hard to comply with Article 13, and the internet will be even more dominated by these guys. Our friends in the US have already helped us to bring this about by killing net neutrality and replacing their internet with this shitonet. So now it's time to destroy Europe's internet with Filternet. The best thing about Phil is that he can be reprogrammed to filter not just copyright violations, but other things too. You know, like whatever we don't like. Which means unless you call your MEPs and stop them from passing Article 13, we'll be building a censorship apparatus that will fart in the general direction of free speech. Filternet. Because here at the European Union, we love uniting people. And Article 13 is bringing everyone together, from the left and the right, to stop us from the internet. Filternet. Authorized.
By the way, in the next week or two, I'm going to be doing a two-hour special on the Progressive Commentary Hour concerning the European Union. It is one of the most absolutely corrupt organizations on the planet. People don't know anything about it. They don't know its history. They don't know its rules. So I'm opposed to the European Union for different reasons than others. But I'm going to bring on people who are scholars on the field and deconstruct it, and who's behind it, how they profit from it. Now let's take a look at this. And by the way, you can watch these video clips by going to youtube.com/PRNFM. Now let's go to a very serious one. No, not so serious. Let's go to a interesting one, and then I'd like your feedback. My Dinner with Andre, and this is a film, and for many of us it was a fun film because it got us thinking. It's only 3 minutes long.
Why do you think that is? I mean, why is that? I mean, is it just because people are lazy today, or they're bored? I mean, are we just like bored, spoiled children who've just been lying in the bathtub all day, just playing with their plastic duck, and now they're just thinking, well, what can I do?
Okay, yes, we are bored. We're all bored now. But has it ever occurred to you, Wally, that the process that creates this boredom that we see in the world now may very well be a self-perpetuating, unconscious form of brainwashing created by a world totalitarian government based on money, and that all of this is much more dangerous than one thinks? And it's not just a question of individual survival, Wally, but that somebody who's bored is asleep, and somebody who's asleep will not say no? See, I keep meeting these people. I mean, just a few days ago, I met this man whom I greatly admire. He's a Swedish physicist, Gustav Bjornstrand, and he told me that he no longer watches television, he doesn't read newspapers, and he doesn't read magazines. He's completely cut them out of his life because he really does feel that we're living in some kind of Orwellian nightmare now, and that everything that you hear now contributes to turning you into a robot. And when I was at Findhorn, I met this extraordinary English tree expert who had devoted his life to saving trees. Just got back from Washington, lobbying to save the redwoods. He's 84 years old, and he always travels with a backpack because he never knows where he's going to be tomorrow. And when I met him at Findhorn, he said to me, "Where are you from?" And I said, "New York." He said, "Ah, New York, yes, that's a very interesting place. Do you know a lot of New Yorkers who keep talking about the fact that they want to leave but never do?" And I said, "Oh, yes." And he said, "Why do you think they don't leave?" I gave him different banal theories. He said, "Oh, I don't think it's that way at all." He said, "I think that New York is the new model for the new concentration camp, where the camp has been built by the inmates themselves, and the inmates are the guards, and they have this pride in this thing they've built. They've built their own prison, and so they exist in a state of schizophrenia, where they are both guards and prisoners, and as a result, they no longer have, having been lobotomized, the capacity to leave the prison they've made or to even see it as a prison." And then he went into his pocket and he took out a seed for a tree and he said, "This is a pine tree." He put it in my hand and he said, "Escape before it's too late." See, actually for 2 or 3 years now, Chiquita and I have had this very unpleasant feeling that we really should get out. And we really should feel like Jews in Germany in the late 30s. Get out of here. Of course, the problem is where to go, because it seems quite obvious that the whole world is going in the same direction. See, I think it's quite possible that the 1960s represented the last burst of the human being before he was extinguished, and that this is the beginning of the rest of the future now, and that from now on there'll simply be all these robots walking around, feeling nothing, thinking nothing, and there'll be nobody left almost to remind them that there once was a species called a human being with feelings and thoughts, and that history and memory are right now being erased, and soon nobody will really remember that life existed on the planet.
Do you see how salient that is concerning today? Very much in tune with what's going on. I'm always interested in hearing what you have to say, so if you have, when we do in these little clips, if you have any insights you'd like to share, we have a talkback number. And you can give us a call at 888-874-4888. I'd like to hear what you have to say. Now we're going to go to a very serious one. And not a word about this anywhere in the world media, for that matter, because we check the world media on this. This is a Dr. Mumbai, a very outspoken, highly intelligent, and very concerned doctor who's looking at the issues in Africa, especially the sterilization that's going on, the agenda in Kenyan young women. Let's hear from her
up, Africa. Your time has come.
Hello and welcome to Africa Watch on the Dr. Mumbi Show. My name is Dr. Mumbi Saraki. How are you doing? How's everything going? I hope you're well in everything that you're doing. I hope you're blessed. And, you know, thanks to every single person that has subscribed to the channel. Don't forget to hit that notification button so that you know every single time we upload a show. Because in our travels, you know, we've been uploading them daily, but sometimes, you know, in different times. Also, thanks to every single person who supports us through our Patreon. We are going to be uploading some special videos just for our Patreon audience. Looking at like our trip, our coming to America vlog, our travel vlog, etc. So keep an eye out for that. Thanks to every single person that has supported us through our PayPal. You guys have made it possible for us to do all this. But now there's some really sad news coming out of Kenya. A lot of you guys sent me this article and asked me to comment on it, and it's absolutely heartbreaking. So what has happened is that Kenya has said that they are going to give free cancer vaccines to all girls in Kenya age 10 and above. And what happens is this will happen in May 2019, and it's a cancer vaccine against HPV. Now, this is really, really worrying because we know that the HPV vaccine has been linked to sterility. It has been linked to sterility, guys, and I'll be giving you that information in a little while. So what they've said, the government released this warning, and I'm telling you, I don't know why our governments think free things are good. Anything that comes to you for free has a cost, and sometimes the cost is your population and your future generations. But you know, if you haven't watched my interview with Riza Islam, go ahead and check it out, where he was saying a lot of our government officials and a lot of our ministers who are making these decisions actually think the World Health Organization is a good thing, actually think the foreign governments are doing a good thing. So get this, the HPV vaccine is going to be offered in 9,000 public hospitals as starting in May next year. It's going to be offered by NGOs, faith-based communities, and private facilities as well. And they're saying that, you know, it's to prevent HPV, which is the biggest cause of cancer deaths for this generation. Now, the supply is the Global Alliance for Vaccines and Immunization. Yeah, I don't trust those guys. And they pay 90% of Kenya's vaccines bill. So Kenya, it's about 4 billion shillings a year. Kenya only pays 10%. And you think our people are protected. I don't know why we think that the enemy would want to extend our lives and make sure we're in good health. It's actually, it's such madness. So they've been paying 90% of our bill. We've been paying 10%. So you can be sure that that's a serious correlation between the fact that we don't pay for our own vaccines and the fact that the, you know, the Kenyan population has actually been shown to be going into aging. We are one of the only populations in sub-Saharan Africa that has actually, that is now looking like a Japanese population or a European population, where we have more old people than, and young people are no longer giving birth. And now they want to just sink the Kenyan ship, I swear. So, you know, I also think that people forget that when you're given a vaccine, it's actually putting a bit of the virus in you. And people seem to forget that that's what it is. So you put the virus in you so that it can trigger your body to develop antibodies. And, you know, there's been such a crazy campaign for this particular vaccine because it has made Merck and It's made Merck and the other organization billions and billions of dollars. When I come back, I'll be telling you why HPV is a silent plague, but why also this is another step in eradicating Kenya's population. We'll be right back.
Oh, come on. All right. It's a 13-minute clip. You can listen to the rest of it, watch the rest of it, by going to prn.fm. But I just wanted to let you know what her message was, that when she had interviewed doctors, when she had gone to hospitals, and some scientists there found that there was a sterilizing agent in the vaccines. Now, it's supposed to be the same vaccine that was given in the United States or other countries, but there was no sterilizing agent except in Kenya and all over Kenya, not just in one place. And so when the physicians started to get samples of all the sterilizing ingredients, they were in every single hospital. So someone should be held accountable, and the World Health Organization should definitely be held accountable. I have no respect for the World Health Organization. It's a purely political beast. And we're doing an article on them, in fact, as we speak, and you'll see our scholarship and what we have to say about them. But isn't it amazing that here are human beings, sentient beings, and we assume because they're poor or they come from a poor country that they're all the same and that they shouldn't be having babies. And so therefore we want to make sure that population control is in effect where it's possible, and there they start introducing vaccines that someone decided, and it wasn't just one person, it takes a lot of people up and down the food chain of command to decide, first, let's decide who we're going to target. We'll do an experimental program. We'll bring down their birth rates. And somehow in their own mind, they justify it. And I think that is just horrendous, that these people should be acting as if they have the right to determine who lives and who's not born in a country. And this is just systemic and institutional racism within those organizations. That's my personal opinion. I'd like to hear yours. 888-874-4888. Now, we are thinking about what you'd like to say if you want to call in. We're going to be doing a series of 10 clips over the next couple of weeks talking about global warming. And there, in fact, I'm going to ask Jesse. We were going to do this later. I'd like to do it now. I want to play a clip in a debate. On the one side is the rebellion that's going on, the Extinction Rebellion. These are a group of individuals who are engaged in active demonstrations, blocking streets, entering buildings, and putting themselves at risk, being arrested. They were here in the United States. We filmed them for the new film. In fact, a couple of their demonstrations last, I believe we filmed them was just last week. But they did a lot in London. So now they're in a debate. There's two sides in this. You're going to hear both sides. And then afterwards, I'll give my comments, and I'd like your comments, about which was the most reasonable side, or if none. You know, you may have a situation where you can listen to a debate and not agree with either one. I'm also going to take the debates that occur regularly at the Oxford Union. These are the most intelligent debates, best research debates I've ever seen in my life. And I watched about, over the last 3 months, I've watched about 30 of them. And I've taken the ones that I thought would be most interesting to this audience. And they take you behind the scenes. They take you deep into an issue. None of these are the stupid, superficial ones. And by the way, the clip that we're going to try to put up for you is the one where we have the British television program where there's a debate between, is it right to be shutting down, let's say, streets and people going to work because you want to make a message? And it's Nigel Farage. He is a strong nationalist, and versus the Extinction Rebellion protesters, one of its leaders. So both have an opportunity to give their points of view. And that's the way a debate should be. So let's listen to it now. Or watch it now. Tim, remember, you can watch all of it.
So it's mostly funded, it's crowdsourced, basically. So we're funded from a huge host of individual donors who sign up and crowdsource us.
Now, is it true that your protesters, those who are camping out on the streets of London, are actually being paid to do this?
So many of those people who are camping out on the streets of London are there because they've taken 2 weeks off work to come to London because of the severity of the emergency that we face. They recognise the need to be in the capital and to highlight the emergency.
Well,
the vast majority of people receive no payment whatsoever.
So some people are paid to do that.
Some people are paid living expenses from Extinction Rebellion because they are committed full-time to working for Extinction Rebellion. And interestingly, in terms of enabling a whole swathe of society to come and work for us, we're not saying you have to do this for free. We're saying wherever you come from within society, whether you're privileged, whether you're working class, if you're committed to Extinction Rebellion, you can come and work for us and we will cover your costs so you can do it. Do not have to be privileged to volunteer for us.
Do you understand the argument? I mean, if I was a London taxi driver, right, I would say to you, there are people being paid to sit in the street to stop me earning a living. Do you understand how upset some people in central London are by your behaviour?
Yes, of course. And the whole philosophy of Extinction Rebellion is to disrupt. That's what we set out to do. There's no easy way of saying that. And every time I say that, I sit in studios and I say to somebody, I am setting out to disrupt your everyday life. I feel very, very uncomfortable about it. And it's accepting that it's been the lack of action for over 30 years from our governments that has meant that we have had to take this action to raise these issues.
No.
If we stand on the streets and hand out leaflets, nobody takes any notice of us. The politicians don't take any notice of us. And interestingly, Nigel, the only reason I'm on this programme today is because we've camped out on the streets of London for the last week.
No, to some extent that's true. But if you really want to move this on, look, I am somebody who 26 or 7 years ago, I took the view that our relationship with the European Union was heading in the wrong direction. I wanted to do something about it. I found, at the time, there were no more than a couple of dozen people in Westminster who were even interested, frankly, in the issue. And so I had a point of view that was very, very, very polar opposite to where political debate in Britain was. And so what did I do? Well, I went out and campaigned around the country, helped form political parties, gained elected representation, and managed to succeed. I don't think I've ever broken the law in doing what I'm doing. So isn't the real argument here that we are a peaceful, democratic society and that what you've brought to London is, frankly, anarchy in the last week?
So that's a really good question. And the idea that we can address the ecological emergency via our democratic system has been one that has been taken forward over the last 30 years. We've tried very, very hard, like through the Green Party, through motions, through campaigning, through marching. We've tried very, very hard to do that, to raise it up the agenda. And to be honest, we haven't done it as well as you raised the issue of our relationship with Europe.
Sarah, maybe your problem is that you're making claims that are frankly hysterical. Hang on. Your website says that there is the possibility of billions dying. That is just not credible, is it?
So I'm sat in an LBC studio here and I'm watching BBC News on the screens and I'm watching pictures of houses being washed away in Japan because they've just had the worst typhoon in 60 years to hit Japan. So our weather, right now, is becoming more extreme. Millions of people no longer have electricity in California can you let me answer the question?
Yeah,
thank you very much. They've had their electricity turned off because of wildfires. At the moment, we are heading for a 4-degree increase in temperature. Okay, by 2100, that's 4 degrees. The weather we've grown up with no longer exists. At 4 degrees, scientists from the Potsdam Institute have said, I cannot see how the Earth can support 1 billion, let alone 500 million people. That is billions of people dying. The risk is there. We are running that risk.
Sarah, I'm sorry, but this extreme weather story is utter nonsense.
No, it's not, Nigel.
You know, even the UN's IPCC, even they who have been set up to actually prove that global warming happens, I mean, even they say they have very low confidence in the level at which global warming could lead to high risks associated with extreme weather. We have had, if you think back through centuries and millennia, we've had earthquakes, volcanic eruptions, storms. I mean, we've seen elephants walking across the Thames, and yet, you know, a couple of centuries before that, Greenland had little snow on it. We've seen huge changes in climate, huge extreme weather events, and if even the IPCC say that, in fact, extreme weather is not related at the moment to climate change, why do you believe that it is?
So we haven't had huge changes in weather and climate over the last 10,000 years. It's been an incredible, stable period. And our weather is becoming more extreme. The Bahamas, they have just had the strongest hurricane to hit the Bahamas in the Northern Hemisphere ever It's flattened the Bahamas. Every weather event, every extreme event that we have is preceded by the next most extreme weather event. We've had the hottest year on record, which preceded the last hottest year on record. There's no way that we can get away from the fact that our scientific measurements are telling us we are warming up and our weather is becoming more and more extreme.
That's climate change. Of course I agree with climate change. It's a constant thing. The climate is always changing. But your obsession in Extinction Rebellion and the global warming movement is all with carbon dioxide. Okay, a couple of points to make on that. You know, the first one is, what is it you actually want? I mean, bear in mind, of course, that in terms of CO2 emissions, this country is between 1% and 2% of the world. I mean, we are very, very small in this game. Indeed. What is it you actually want the government to do? I mean, would people be able to go to Marbella on their holidays? Would they be able to own, you know, a 4x4 motor car? What is it you actually think government needs to do? And government here has actually already made a commitment that I think's impossible to keep, of saying that by 2050 we'll be zero net neutral on carbon. But you want this to happen by 2025. To do that, we would effectively have to close down the whole of British industry, wouldn't we?
We would have to totally refocus British industry. It would be a mobilisation like we did in 1939.
It's the opposite, isn't it? In 1939, we built factories to produce munitions for war.
Actually, we refocused our factories, Nigel, is what we did. We took the infrastructure that was in place and we refocused it towards the war effort. And also, what we also did was we rationed what was available and brought the country together. We unified the country and we mobilised to fight a common enemy. Unfortunately, the enemy that we're looking at the moment, we can't see it.
So,
but it is there, and that's why we're calling for zero carbon by 2025.
So steel would go.
To defend and protect.
Chemical production would go. Refining would go. What would we have left?
So the choices that we're looking at are really, really grim. And that's why Extinction Rebellion is asking for a citizens' assembly. So the people come together to decide how and what the change that is required looks like. Rather than politicians sitting in Westminster and saying to us, you have to do that, this, you need to do that, we bring together...
How?
We do it in various ways. We already do it for juries, for example. And in the past, juries decided life or death of people. We bring it together using...
Who brings them together?
Okay, there's a number of people who are already running citizens' assemblies. There's external bodies. You ask a body of people to set up the citizens' assembly. You bring together people from across the United Kingdom, so it represents people in terms of their age, in terms of their social status, in terms of their wealth. You get a cross-section of people. You explain to them, you educate, and then you ask their opinion of how we move forward. It's what the Irish did with regard to the abortion question, which was very controversial.
And then what do? Do you put this to a referendum?
Implement it through government. You have to keep the structures of the state in place.
An appointed citizens' assembly would tell government what to do.
They would lead and advise government, and it then becomes very difficult for government to say, we are not going to do this because it has been requested by the people, by representatives of the people.
I have to say, I'm very sceptical about that.
Well, I offer an invitation to you? What I would like to do is to offer an invitation to you to come and understand about citizens' assembly.
I've seen them in Brussels.
And how radical they are. And I would also like to invite you... to come and meet with some climate scientists and to actually understand the issues around the science and why what we face is so grave and why we say we are looking at the extinction, not only of the animals around that we love and cherish, but also we face the risk, the possibility of the extinction of human beings.
Yeah,
we are on the endangered list.
Well, I don't think I haven't spoken to scientists on both sides of this argument over the years. I have. One final point.
So is that a yes or a no, Nigel? Will you come and meet with us?
I'm very happy to sit with scientists representing both sides of the argument and have a proper debate, absolutely. But it needs to be a proper debate, and that's really, really important. You know, when I heard Tony Blair say a few years ago on this issue that the science was settled, I thought that is ridiculous. No science is ever settled. Science is always something that is open to debate and amendment going forwards. I want to ask you one question.
Yeah, but I didn't understand if it was a yes or a no to meet.
If I can come and meet people on both sides of the argument and objectively listen to what both have to say, yes.
I'm absolutely not sure there's many scientists on the other side of the argument.
There are plenty. There are plenty. I promise you. There are plenty.
So that's a yes, that you'll come and meet.
If they're both. But why is it? See, we had a caller this week. I was debating this in the week. I had a caller ring in from Broadstairs in Kent, and he was in charge of the local beach cleaning charity. And, you know, they go out and clear up plastics and cigarette butts and all the rest of it off our beaches, something which I support and I'm sure you would support as well. He said, it's really interesting. I put big appeals out in the local newspapers and through the internet for volunteers to come along and help do beach cleaning. He said, nobody under 50 ever turns up. And I do wonder about this. If CO2 is what you're worried about, and it, clearly it is, that is, you know, the theory is it's CO2 increase that is leading to a warming of the climate. The one real antidote for that, as I understand it, are that trees absorb lots of carbon dioxide. Why don't you guys, rather than just protesting, blocking up the streets in London, why don't you guys become part of a national campaign to reforest the United Kingdom? You know, we've really got only about a quarter of the woodland and forestry that we had just going back a few centuries. You get two benefits from that. Number one, a lot more CO2 would be absorbed. Number two, if we plant the right trees in the right places, in terms of, you know, our general biodiversity, we'd be in a great place. I don't see... Here's my problem. I see your campaign as being negative. Where are the positives?
So once you get into providing solutions, you then start arguing about solutions. And when Extinction Rebellion started, the idea and the severity of the climate of the emergencies that we face was not even on the agenda. The truth of the risk we are facing, that our children are facing, still is not being told. And so Extinction Rebellion's main aim is to tell the truth, to request zero carbon by 2025, because that is what is needed to give us a chance of avoiding catastrophic and runaway heating of our planet, and to use democracy via the Citizens' Assembly, upgrade democracy to find the solution to it. If we ask people, if we say, we're facing an emergency and what I want you to do is go out and plant a few trees, it doesn't really feel like what we're asking you to do is commensurate with the risk that we are saying you are facing.
Would a global reforestation plan solve the problem?
It would not solve the problem, but using our
it would help.
Using plants, using trees, using sequestration through agriculture is absolutely one of the things that we need to do and that we need to get started on. And I would imagine that that would be something that a Citizens' Assembly would.
Yeah. Well, I have to say, of all the things you've said, the Citizens' Assembly frightens me the most, because I worry who'd be on it. But hey, I tell you what, we've had a good conversation here about Extinction Rebellion. I hope you've all learnt a bit more about who they are, what they believe. What do you think? Do you think this is hysterical and over the top and very, very potential?
All right, well, they both had a chance to make some points. Here's where they're both limiting their view, and possibly because a lack of awareness of the facts. Currently, we have over 44 major tipping points that we're faced with. At least half of those tipping points are tipping. There's nothing in the world we'll ever do about them. For example, we are now listening to Bill Gates, unfortunately, and other people say that we need more materials in the air, and that's your geoengineering, and that's your chemtrails, but that's barium and toxic metals. We even have a program every week on Progressive Radio Network, and I don't know the date or time, but I'll get that from Jesse in a moment, to explain this to people. And those are toxins that will come out of the sky and drop on ground and be breathed in. And that is extremely dangerous. But we also recently found out something that's just terrifying, that we didn't know how much of these natural and or human-made chemicals were getting in the air because of all the airplanes. And so they did a test measuring the air quality during the 5 days after 9/11, that there were no planes allowed in the air, and there was a 1 degree increase Celsius in the United States. Now, that would put us at about 2.6%. We would then be in a position that they're saying then we would have major changes. Soil would be too hot in many areas to grow their normal crops. Now, it may not seem like a lot when it increases 2 degrees because we just had a 60-degree fluctuation in Colorado, Idaho. It was 30 degrees below zero in Idaho, but it had been 60 degrees above. You're talking about 90-degree shift in 24 hours. But we're talking about what that means to the ground and therefore making life virtually challenging. So we have to look at what is facing us now, and it's not carbon dioxide's our number one problem today. It's insect depletion. It is honeybee depletion that causes pollination. It's Dame Wigington, by the way, and he has got a program called Global Alert News, Dane Wigington, and he's on Wednesday at 2 p.m. on Progressive Radio Network. You don't want to miss it. He does outstanding programs. In any case, so we have to look honestly at what we can do. And what we do is realize that the Arctic is melting, that the methane is coming up, and methane is anywhere from 28 to 68 times more dangerous to creating global warming than carbon dioxide. At the same time, we're destroying the great rainforest, the boreal rainforest and the Amazon rainforest for logging and raising soybeans and grazing cattle. We're doing the wrong thing for the wrong reason, and that's having an impact. On the other hand, I can certainly understand the Extinction Rebellion idea that let's make it so clear that we have a crisis that we get their attention. The question is, do you really think that blocking traffic where normal people going to work are going to say, God, I'm glad I'm going to be 2 hours late today. This is raising my awareness, and now I'm going to do something. No, they're going to be angry with you. So you're not thinking of this through. And citizens committees, yeah. Jeez, that's the most immature thought I've heard all week. You want to say a citizens committee did nothing? Try Occupy Wall Street. I was there. I interviewed them in New York, in Philadelphia, in Washington, D.C., all around, in California, in Florida. And wrong, maybe the right idea. Let's create a people's assembly and broadcast by our own voices. And yeah, did nothing. And they were infiltrated. Every single group was infiltrated by the FBI, according to WikiLeaks. So you've got to give a message to people that is palatable. You've got to be able to show them what the realistic effect would be of them not doing anything, and then what is possible if they did something at personally and in groups, and at what level, the federal level, the state level, and the local level. Those are discussions that we need to have. There are positive solutions, but right now we have no group that is willing to take on global warming except the people who are trying to profit from it. Even today, the International Monetary Fund says we must have a gigantic carbon tax. Yeah. So you're going to tax corporations or governments like the Chinese government for the pollution they're creating. Exactly how does that stop their pollution? They'll just print more money and pay whatever fine you get. Or you want to be a hedge fund or some form of a financial institution that is then dedicated to process all these carbon deals. Then it's just making billions of dollars for those who are smart enough to have 16-year-old girls go into the consciousness of society and awaken it for a moment in time. But that moment comes, there's a blink of an eye, and you're on to the next crisis. Nothing is done. Nothing. So we have to separate out and not conflate an ideal that should be discussed with multiple ideas, not just one, and bring the experts into that. And if you're not an expert, how valued then could your opinion be? And then once the experts who are not industry associated and qualify them based upon their life history to make sure they're not a lobbyist, they're not in it for the money, they're not in it for an ideological or political reason, and then let them come up with realistic assessments. Because if you think, if this woman thinks that we're going to have all carbon at zero in Great Britain in 5 years, that will never happen. You would literally have to close down all industry. All those people would be out of work. And all the services, including coal-burning fire that plants that provide energy. So look at the consequences. If you had that radical of an approach and not thinking, what is the average person? And now you can't heat your home? Because that's what it means when you have zero carbon. It means no carbon. You couldn't drive a car. You couldn't be on a plane. You couldn't be on a ferry. You couldn't be on a bus. You couldn't be on a train. Because they all are polluting. So unfortunately, a person sometimes has more enthusiasm and more concern than they have science or common sense. So, and by the way, I put all this into a 700-page book. It's coming out shortly. It's done. It's just I haven't had time to work with the publisher, even setting a pub date, but it's done. We have to think well. We have to think in depth. We have to think without emotion. We have to think and look at facts. We have to see what is doable, what is not. Is the public ready to make a commitment? Are we ready to have, you know, an effort like we did in the United States after Pearl Harbor and in Great Britain after the Nazis bombed them? Try to get the average person away from their television or the young people away from everything that's distracting them and become committed. And then ask them to stop eating the hamburger and the chicken in order to give themselves some opportunity to learn what it is to be a healthy vegan. See how that goes down. I'm Gary Nall. We are looking for positive solutions, but those solutions are not going to do any good if we don't have a positive, open-minded, and progressively imbued population willing to engage and change their life and go through some discomfort in the process. We are a nation of comfort addicts. We're just not in enough pain to change, and that's unfortunate. Have a nice day, everyone.
I went and stayed too long.